Hello, welcome to a Two Sports Nuts exclusive interview. John Mulhern being joined today by professional hockey defenseman Daryl Hay. And Daryl, I call you a professional hockey defenseman because I was doing a little bit of research, and you've bounced around no less than six teams through your hockey database information that I found. But first, I know you from your time at the Idaho Steelheads, and I say your time because you were there more than I was. I was there for one season. Apparently, I made such a good impression on you that you bailed out of the country after that one season. But let's start there because that's how I met you. That's how I know you. But you had, you know, five different years at the Steelheads, five stints there. Let's talk about your time with Idaho, and then we'll kind of go back and get kind of look into how you kind of broke into professional hockey. Two championships, right?
Two championships, yeah. I was fortunate to achieve a little success there. It was funny because I played in the Kelly Cup Finals against Atlantic City the year before when I was in South Carolina before the West Coast League merged with the East Coast League. And I had plans on going back to South Carolina. Scott White, the player personnel director in Dallas, was calling me all summer and recruiting me. And then out of the blue, I got this call from a guy named John Oliver in Boise, Idaho. And, I mean, I had no idea what Boise, Idaho. I'd driven through it when I'd been driving across to Kansas City my first year pro. And he invited me down to spend a weekend in Boise and check out the amenities and check out the facilities that they had to offer. And it was kind of a recruiting trip. I felt like one of those recruits in those old football days. So I went into town and I met a guy named Jeremy Melmott and Scott Burt, and they took me out on the town. I ended up meeting a girl I now date. She was bartending at the time, and it was just turned into one of those plays. It became a love affair. I fell in love, really off the hop with it, and you know, fortunately, J.O. did a great job in the off season recruiting a lot of players, and we went on to win the Kelly Cup that year. And I mean, it was just one of those magical years that after losing in five games in the finals the year before, to come back and be in it again and be in a city that I mean, was craving a championship and be able to deliver it was just an incredible feeling.
That was the 2003-2004 season, which, as you mentioned, it was the first year the Idaho Steelheads were part of the ECHL. And, in fact, just up until, I guess it was about a week ago, when the Allen Americans won this last Kelly Cup, the Steelheads were the last and probably the first expansion team to win their first year as part of the ECHL. And some of the names you mentioned, some of the Steelheads fans will know, but John Oliver, J.O. there, as he's known around town, Scott Burr, Jeremy Melmuck, these are some pretty big names among Steelhead faithful. Melmuck's got his number retired. Was Cal Ingraham there at the time as well? I know he was a holdover from
Cal
the
Ingraham.
Team, right?
Yeah, Cal just was finishing up with the West Coast Hockey League there, so he was the assistant coach that year. That was the first year Steelheads had an affiliate, and they were with Dallas and Salt Lake, so we had Nat Ellis, who turned into a pretty good goalie in the NHL, Zanon Konopka, Lance Galbraith, David Kornacki, I mean, the old Steelheads. We had a few holdovers from the West Coast Hockey League days that were kind of the nucleus, but we had a lot of kind of young punks on the block that were, you know, just getting their pro career started and are bouncing around the ECHL or trying to get a sniff in the American League. And J.O. took us in and made a good group out of us. I thought, but a guy like Jeremy Melmuck, who won, I think it was two Turner Cups in Chicago, was our kind of our heart and soul type of guy. He was our leader. And we had a great cast of characters around him. Blair Allison was in net for a lot of the year. He's another guy. I think his name gets mentioned for going up in the rafters in Boise. And a guy who's turned himself, to a real good, realtor around that area too. And, we just, one of those years that things just kind of came together at the right time. We were down, I think, two games to none, and Vegas coming back into our building. It was best of five first round, and we won those two games and had to fly back to Vegas with them on the same flight for game five that day. And
They were on the same flight, and we played that night.
So it was one of those ones. We got on the plane. We had our swagger going. Guys were like yelling profanities at each other across the plane. It was it was like the updated slap shot. It was a lot of fun, and it was one of my favorite experiences in hockey was that run we went on, because I tell you what, I don't think anybody really took it serious, but it was month and a half, 2 months of straight fun and guys just really bonding and becoming a team. And I could see, I still talk to a lot of those guys. We still keep in touch and we still reminisce about those days.
Well, let's go back to the beginning a little bit. You're 35 years old. Happy birthday, about 2.5 months late, I guess. And I can say that because I just turned 33, so I'm not that far behind you. So we're both a couple of old guys, I guess, if you want to put
yeah,
it in
I just,
those terms.
I started hanging out with these young guys, John, now. I just say 29 for the sixth time now. It's just I'm getting out of 35. I'm getting closer to 40 than I am. I'm 30. It's funny when you say that. It's been in the blue in this now for 15 years, and I remember my first season pro, I got sent down to Fort Myers, Florida, and it was just an incredible place to play and to be able to come out and be down in South Florida and all the amenities that go along with that. But I remember the guy, his name was Andy McIntyre, and he was probably 34, 35 at the time. I looked over at this other young rookie, and I was like, what is he doing playing hockey at 35? This guy's got to be bananas or something. We both thought, oh, if we're playing at 35, blah, 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 you know, this and that. And, I mean, it's one of those things that gets in your blood, and I don't even want to give it up. I may turn into coaching here next year, but it's one of those things that once you get on that roller coaster, it's tough to get off.
Well, we'll talk about the coaching here in a little bit, but I want to get back to your 1999 draft pick, number 271. Yep. I'm sure you know who drafted you, right?
Yeah, they're just down the road here in BC, down in Vancouver.
Yeah, Vancouver drafts you now.
I was 271 out of 272. I was like the second to last name in the hat that year.
Oh, were you really? Almost as impressive as being like the first or second pick in the draft. To be honest with you, I think the fact
I know I was
name,
almost Mr. Irrelevant. I thought
yeah,
I was going to be Mr. Irrelevant.
Well,
my grandma was. She had a good time with it. She said, "Bill Darrell, you're the second last pick of the century," and I was always laughed at that. The way grandmas can put a twist on things.
There you go. You know what? Why not spin it that way if you can? Here's my question that the accuracy is questionable at best, but you spent 4 years at Tri-City, and I guess one of those as a junior league in the WHL, or was at the time the Western Hockey League. Did you spend 1 year as an overager down there? Because based on kind of the years is how it fell, you didn't get drafted until after about your third year with the team, right?
Yeah, I got drafted as an 18-year-old, so
did
I started
really?
At 16. It is still part of the WHL now. They had a good history of guys go through there. Carey Price is a graduate that's come out of there. It's a name that everybody will know. And they're down and located in Southeast Washington there. And growing up in Kamloops here with a team that's the same as the Kamloops Blazers and the history that they have, it was really nice for me to get out of here at 16 and go play there. And I was a high Bantam pick. I think I was ninth overall in the Bantam draft, and I was able to go down there and kind of get my feet wet and playing and kind of grow up. I mean, you didn't have your parents around for the first time in your life. And Tri-Cities was a really good spot. I had great billets that really I still keep in touch with, and they, you know, mean the world to me. And they looked after me and taught me a lot about growing up. And for me being Canadian and going to school in the States, it was just I thought I was in a movie. It seems to be watching Canada when they have the old high school scenes in the movies. They had a pep band and a dance team and cheerleaders, stuff that, you barely see in Canada at all. So that was eye-opening. And then, I got drafted my second year eligibility in the draft at 18. And I think I was ranked in the fifth or sixth round and ended up going to the ninth round. So, that was a little bit of a disappointment. But I had a good final season in junior. I was invited to World Juniors and went there. And I think I was one of the second to last cuts with Mike Comrie, I think his name was.
He did all right for himself.
And, I had a good year. And then I ended up signing with Vancouver at the end of the year. And then I was on my pro career. I went to Kansas City for about 10 games, I believe it was, and then I got sent down to Florida for the rest of the year. And then it was their Winnipeg team in the American League, and I was kind of up and down there. I'd play a little, got hurt, got sent down for a bit. It was just one of those ones that could never really put things together. And then lo and behold, after that contract was done, I found a spot in Boise that has always kind of been kind of like gravity for me. I always seem to keep coming back to it.
Well, here's what I got my list for ECHL teams, and fill me in if I got some gaps here, but you play with the Florida Everblades, who still exist, the Columbia Inferno twice. Now, again, I don't know if it was twice. I don't know if they were consecutive years.
No, that was because they were the East Coast League affiliate of Vancouver. So when I got called up when in Winnipeg, I get sent down and it'd be like Idaho and Austin right now. You can get called up and go back down. So it wasn't two different times. It was just once every a year up and down. So
you played parts of five seasons with the Steelheads, I believe is accurate, in the ECHL, and we talked about that already a little bit.
Yeah, I was there for five seasons. Yeah, I think I got called up a couple of times in different parts of those seasons, but yeah, five seasons there.
Now, here's the 2 years with the Manitoba Moose, two stints with the Manitoba Moose in the AHL, and then you play with the Utah Grizzlies, and people are going to hear, and this is the AHL team, because at the time when Idaho moved to the ECHL, they were actually, as you mentioned, they were the ECHL affiliate of the AHL team, which was the Utah Grizzlies at the time.
Yeah.
Now,
my father was coaching the team.
That was going to be my question. I noticed that he was the coach. I'm not going to say his favoritism there, but that certainly couldn't hurt when he's the head coach who can say, hey, I need a guy.
I got cut right out of training camp. There's no favoritism there, and I ended up getting called up around Christmas time, or I think December it was, and played 10 games. They were just, injury depleted, and we were doing well in Boise, and he was calling up the guys he could, and we were, coming out of the American League the years before. I had experience. I played against those guys, and it's all niche to do it. And yeah, it was just one of those funny circumstances that I ended up showing up, and my old man was the coach.
As I mentioned already, I show up to Idaho the 2008-2009 season, and the season didn't end as well for the Steelers as we would like. I think I hesitate to say it was a sweep in the first round, but I know it was a first round exit, and I know it was to the Aces. I know it was pretty ugly. But you do have the distinction of being the first ever top star interview that I did. And I remember, I remember that game because I had got the job, and there's a whole backstory to it, but essentially I ended up with Bonnie Way Snyder at the time, was with the team before Will Hennecke stepped in. And she set me up to do video with Derek Laxtal, who's now the coach of the Texas Star, excuse me. And the top star post-game interview, because the year before they couldn't find anybody to do it consistently. She comes down with about 5 minutes to go in the game, and it must have been a loss. Because she said, I'll find somebody who's going to be easy for you to do to kind of get my feet wet. And she ends up picking you as the first guy. And I have no idea what I actually asked. All I know is that about a month later you told me that your mother has said I mispronounced your name wrong.
I don't know.
I mispronounced Daryl wrong in the interview, but that's about all I remember. So that's...
I don't know. I forgive you, John. It's not a problem. That's all right. When you get to be a big famous interviewer in the NHL and pro sports, you can put that one in your book for you. First interview, on-ice interview you did.
That'll be a little trivia answer to my Wikipedia page or something.
Yeah. But there you go. I like that.
Well, let's talk about that season, because the 08-09 season was, I don't want to say it was your first foray into coaching, because that's not necessarily how that season started out for you. You start out like any other season, you're ready to go, you start playing, and then you get hurt. And even though I was in the coach's office, I was never really privy at that point to what the injuries were. I just know that you were in there an awful lot more than you were on the ice, at least for the first half of the season.
Yeah, I blew my MCL, so I was it was on our first road trip of the year. We went back east out to Elmira. I did it, and it ended up requiring a lot of rehab and a knee brace and things like that. So Laxey was nice enough to invite me into the dressing room and ask my thoughts. And it was just one of those things that kind of worked out, and we kind of both thought things the same. And from being there the couple of years before, I got to know him quite well, and he was great for me. And getting, to sit in those chairs and be part of it and understand how things work and what's going on and how you do things, as a coach, was just really it's exciting for me, something that kind of piqued a new interest in hockey. I think sometimes you, as a player, you get so concerned about worrying about yourself, you forget about everything else that's going on. I mean, you're an individual in there, and you're there to concentrate on your game as a coach. Your perspective has to be a lot wider, and I think that was the thing that Laxey really showed me and really taught me, was that, I mean, it's got to be good for everybody, and things have to work. And I mean, you can see the success he's had over the years and the championships he's won, and, I mean, ECHL and junior hockey and now on the American League. I mean, he's knocking on the NHL door now, and I'm sure he's going to be there the next few seasons.
And you're getting, I'm going to say you're getting up there in age, but when you look at the way the ECHL rosters are constructed, at the time, I would say you were, if I do some quick math, you were 27, 28 years old at the end of that season.
Yeah, I think when I was just turning 29, that was my last season there, the year that you got there, and it was what, my third year with Laxey, and I mean, at that point, I was, what was it, three or four veterans, I think there was, I mean, Birdie, Flex, myself, or something like that, or something, mm-hmm. you know, four, but you're allowed your three or four veterans, and, I mean, we were mainstays, guys that have been, I mean, held over from a number of years there, and, I mean, I think the ECHL is one of those things, you have to have those kind of, those stalwarts there, where they're going to be back, they want to sell season tickets, you want, fans want names, they're going to recognize people that they've come to know and spend a lot of time with, and, I mean, at that time, you didn't know who you were getting from the American League teams. You just knew that you were probably going to get a handful of players. So that game familiarity was key. And, I mean, Flicks turned it into a great career there. I mean, I enjoyed my time there. I just, when I got to the end of that 09 season, I was, Laxey kind of said, he goes, Hazy, you know, you've got to make a decision. Either you go to Europe now and continue playing and go make some money, or you stay here and you better figure out what you want to do with the next part of your life, because, I mean, the American League is not going to be knocking on the door anymore, and, you know, it's time to start getting your affairs in order. And I mean, I kind of took that as a wake-up call. I wanted to keep playing, and I had a guy approach me about, I mean, leaving Boise and going over to Norway to start, and, I mean, it turned out to be one of the best decisions that I made. It's turned into a pretty fun life the last 6 years, playing in Europe and abroad, and I've been able to parlay that into my next chapter, assistant coach in the UK.
Well, again, we will get to that, because there's a whole list of questions to go along with that. But let's talk about going overseas, because you talked about, you know, extending your career. And when you go back and, you know, maybe in 30, 40 years and you look back, it's almost, if you think about it, like you've had two separate careers. You've had the North American career, and now you've had the European career, the overseas career.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the for? I guess it's different for every player. I mean, now anymore, you think that the voices in the wind say that the money's better overseas. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's kind of the rumblings, if you will. But for you, was it a money thing, or was it an extend your career playing thing? Because I don't know what the skill levels are either. I mean, when you were looking at it, what were you kind of taking in as the big picture to go, you know what, I can go extend my career and play over in Europe?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that for me was the big question. I think if you have a joy for doing what you do, I think you always kind of figure, the money thing will always kind of figure itself out. I mean, I can say it wasn't a factor, but I mean, it wasn't the deciding factor. And I thought, when I left Boise the first time, I went to Germany and I hated it. I struggled every day. I was on the phone, all my buddies back in Boise, and I mean, I just missed it. I was homesick. It was my first time away and in a new country where there was no English, and
right.
It was just I was really shell shocked. And I think because of the relationships that I developed in Boise, I mean, that's what made it so difficult, because I had such a good support system around there with friends and people and the people on the team and throughout the team and the people I got to meet. With the fans and the booster club stuff, and I mean, I was home. It was comfortable. I knew what I was going to expect every day. I knew what to, you know, how to act. I knew the rules, you know, and I went from there. And I went to Germany and ended up hating it. I said, I'm never going back there again, shaking my fist at the sky. Just whoever got me there, you know, and then, you know, just a total Homer Simpson type moment. And then, And then when this came up, it was Norway. The coach spoke English. I mean, Norway is a big English-speaking population. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a try. And I mean, worst case, I'm 30 years old. I can come home and find a job doing something else. And ended up loving it. Ended up working myself in a really good shape and doing well and having a really good season over there. And then before I left, the team in Czech called for the next year. And, I mean, I thought the Czech league, there was a lot of old NHL guys over there. And I thought, you know what, this is going to be great. This is going to be a lot of fun. And ended up making that transition. And, I mean, it was just one of those things, one domino after another. And then I kind of got the itch to travel, and I tried picking the most exotic locales I could go play in. And it ended up being I mean, hockey was number one always, right? Wink, wink. But
right.
I ended up, just trying to see the world, trying to go do that, and fill that old dream journal type thing, just pictures and having beers in different places, and it was just been a lot of fun. I mean, I can't believe. I mean, 35. I was telling my buddy the other day. I said, 30 to 35, like being in Europe and being abroad, is going so much quicker than 25 to 30 ever went for me. And it's just amazing how quick things go and how you can look back like today. And I'm at 15 years of minor league hockey. I feel like Crash Davis and Bull Durham.
Here's the question that I've always wondered. When you get some of these, especially now because you have the KHL over there in Russia, you get some of these, I guess I'll call them big names that come over into the NHL and you see all the things on Twitter and such sign with Team X, like this is a great sign for them, and they'll bring this, this, and this. When American players go over to Europe, are they kind of looked as the quote-unquote hired gun, or are they brought in and they're part of the team, or what's the perception of North American players that go over to Europe?
I think it depends where you go. I think the top leagues, you're almost a mercenary to an extent. You know, you're hired to do a job. They're a lot harder on the import players there, especially if you do have NHL credentials. I mean, the leagues where I started in Germany and Norway weren't that way. I mean, you were an addition to their club and somebody that was going to help them win. And I mean, that was the biggest thing. But when I got the check, I mean, there was a lot more expectations being a North American, because they didn't carry a lot of them there. So you had to produce and you had to play at a high level, and I was on a bad team, so that was tough to do some nights. But going there, I mean, especially the KHL, the Swiss League, the guys that go to, I mean, Sweden, Finland, all those top leagues. I mean, those guys are a lot of pressure pack situations. They're expected to produce, and there's not a lot of wiggle room if you don't. They're not afraid to get rid of guys and fire guys and end their contracts. So it's a lot more cutthroat over there. You don't have the luxury of having guaranteed deals. You don't have the luxury of, knowing what's being said in the dressing room a lot either. I mean, I remember sitting in check and it felt like I was a Charlie Brown in class here, and the teacher speak. It was just wah, 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 wah. And I mean, until they said something in English like forecheck or, he said my name, I was just wasn't paying attention. I was building rocket ships in my mind. So it definitely changes your aspect and changes your idea of hockey a little. Because, I mean, when you're younger, all you're taught is to listen, 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 and, mm-hmm. and be engaged and things like that. And then over there, it was, if you listen too hard, you just get frustrated because you realize how backward some of the stuff is. So there was a couple times there I'd have to put the screensaver on the brain and not worry and just kind of do my own thing and just try not to get frustrated, because it can be extremely frustrating at times.
Okay, let me ask you another experience question. You went over to Europe. You were an older guy. You had the experience of games played to be able to kind of put that screensaver on your brain and just kind of get into your own mind and know what adjustments you would have to make during the course of the game. You get some of these kids that come into the ECHL and they play one, maybe one and a half seasons. They light the lamp, mostly forwards. You don't see too many defensemen bail out in the middle of the season, but you see these young kids that put up 20 goals in a month. They put up a bunch of assists, you know, 30 points in 30 games. Next thing you know, they're on a plane over to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's harder for a 20, 21-year-old kid to go over to Europe, especially one that, you know, has a language barrier, than it would be to, say, be a guy who's 30 with a bunch of games of experience to be able to adjust to a situation like that?
I mean, I wish I would have gone earlier now than when I went. I think I think when you're that age, you have no fear. You're like a kid, you know, you don't know what to expect. You don't know how it's been done, you know what I mean? I always was so impressed with the way I was treated in Boise that I expected everywhere else I went to mimic that. And I think once I had that benchmark in my head, I mean, a lot of places I went to didn't live up to those things. So it was difficult. I think the language nowadays is kind of out the window because there are so many guys that speak English. And I mean, everybody I find overseas is either they love America or they hate America, but they all know how to speak English and they tell you about it. And they're all, I mean, the young guys, especially, they're watching their MTV and, you know, I mean, watching their YouTube clips of the NHL games from the night before and guys' highlight tapes so they know what's going on. I mean, people are pretty smart that way, but it can be difficult. I think the part that people don't realize is the other, 21 hours a day when you're not at the rink, not surrounded by people that are trying to make an effort to bring you in and speak to you and make you feel part of things when you have to go out and go to the grocery store in Germany and you have no idea what's going on and you have no idea what you're buying and you have all this goofy money they gave you to do it with and you're driving a car and you have no idea what's going on with a bunch of corporate sponsors on it from the team. And I mean, that can be a little tough, but I think after those first couple of years, I became, a lot more confident in my abilities as a person just because I said, you know what, well, why not? Well, let's try this. Why not? Let's go do this. And I mean, it all came to a head. I thought I had it all figured out. And then I went and played in Japan for a year. And that was just going into a supermarket there, going into anywhere there and trying to, fit in. I mean, I felt like I was at the zoo and everybody was looking at me. So it was fun, but it's one of those things. I think at the end of the day, I'll remember a lot more of the life experiences than I ever remember a lot of the hockey experiences playing overseas, just because you're forced to get out of your comfort zone. You're forced to engage yourself. And I mean, when you put forth the effort, I find a lot of people are going to try to help you out. And you try to speak the language, and you try to make an asset of yourself. You know, trying to do what they do in their culture. I mean, they'll meet you halfway and give you a lot of help.
Well, that's awesome. And now your hockey career has taken you back to England, the EIHL. What does that stand for exactly?
Elite Ice Hockey League.
Okay, and that is in the UK. And you played last year with the Sheffield Steelers. And I guess I should first of all, I'll congratulate you because I saw on Twitter you won some sort of a championship. I guess it was the regular season championship or the league championship. What did you win?
Regular season title. It's a lot like soccer over there, but I guess football they call it, where the champion, the league champion, is the person that wins the regular season title. They don't really do much for playoffs, so we ended up winning that. So, which was the first time I've ever been part of a team that's won a regular season trophy, call it the league trophy. It was a lot of fun, and they had a big ceremony and a big cup. And I mean, I compare it to winning the Kelly Cup. I mean,
I was going to say it looked like a pretty big celebration for just winning the regular season.
Yeah.
When you put it in perspective of the English Premier League soccer, it makes a little bit of sense, at least in my mind.
Yeah. I mean, because we were on it there. Chelsea was trying to win theirs, and there were so many points up. And you know, I mean, you see the celebration of these guys, and I was playing with guys that never won it, and that was all they wanted to do. They won the playoffs, and they're like, "Oh, anybody can win the playoffs." And I'm looking at these guys thinking, oh my God, anybody can win playoffs. Like, have you ever gone try to go through four series and win 16 games? It's a little tougher than anybody can win playoffs. But like you said, once you put it in perspective and kind of figure things out, what was going on, you realize the importance of the regular season championship and how the magnification of every regular season game. You know, you can go into some places where you thought you'd be able to take a night off, and then they up stunning you, and the team that's chasing you wins, and now going home on a Sunday, that game's a lot more important. So, every game was big, and, I mean, we ended up having the good fortune of being able to hoist a trophy at the end of the year. And I mean, anytime we can do that, I'd say that's a success.
What was the what's the schedule? Obviously, in the NHL, 82 games, 72 in the ECHL. I don't know what the AHL is. I think it's 76. What's the schedule like over there in the EIHL?
I think we ended up playing probably 60 games, maybe regular season games, or 54. But they have all these cup games, these exhibition cups, or not exhibition cups, but they call them different trophies throughout the year. So all your games aren't going to be regular season. They have something called Challenge Cup. And then they have these other little tournaments where you might play a second league team and stuff. And it's all this stuff. So you end up counting all these games that you play. But I think the regular season is just 54 games.
So I was reading some overseas newspapers, and you guys, so you won the regular season, and did I read correctly that you lost two finals for some of these secondary tournaments and cups and stuff as well?
Yeah, we lost the playoff final, and we lost the Challenge Cup final. So we got to the finals of these playoffs and the Challenge Cup, and we ended up losing both. We lost 2-1 to Cardiff in the Challenge Cup, and then we lost the playoff final 4-2 to a very strong Coventry team. So, I mean, it's one of those things, they're one-game playoffs, anything can happen, but,
okay.
I mean, we were a team that was built for consistency, and I'd hate to use the old Patriots reference where you win 16 games and that you end up losing the last one, you know what I mean? You go undefeated. But we just came up short. It was one of those things, one of those old sports analogies, they were better that day. And I mean, if we would have won all three and swept the league, it would have been swept all three trophies. It would have been incredible. I think it's only happened, a handful of times in elite league history. So to be in three finals is fantastic, but it would have been a lot nicer to have trophies in all three.
So, like you said, it's just impressive to get to three cup finals, if you will, and to win the overall league, which, again, I'd imagine the celebrations would be equal for winning those secondary cup, the playoffs, and the Challenge Cup, but it really seemed like the guys wanted to win the league more than anything else. Like you said, it's so important to them. It's just a status thing.
You want to win everything, I think, is the key when you go into it. But, I mean, as far as kind of like the, I guess, hierarchy of them, it's definitely the league champs, playoff champs, and Challenge Cup champs. Those kind of those 1, 2, 3 like that of importance. So, I mean, we ended up winning the big one, and we finished second in the other two. So, I mean, for me, it was a good year. We had a really good team, mixed with a lot of old ECHL guys. And, it felt great to be part of a winning club again, to be able to lift a trophy, to be able to throw your gloves and helmet up in the air and kind of go cuckoo. It was probably 07 since the last time I did that, so long overdue.
Do they have relegation? Do they have leagues set up for relegation purposes in hockey like they do in Premier League?
No, not for hockey, not in England. And when I was in Czech, they did. Italy, they used to. And then Germany, they do. Or I think Germany, they might be done now. But, we used to. I was in the relegation with Gord Baldwin 1 year in Czech, and we were there for another about 2 months. I didn't think we got home till start of May. We probably could have won a Stanley Cup and been home sooner.
Did you play with Gord this year in Sheffield?
Yeah, I played with Gord this year. We got to know each other really well. We lived, we were apartments across the hall, and we played in Czech together. And then he was one of the big factors in why I went to Sheffield last year.
Yeah, Gord
kind of recruited me. And
he came through Idaho a couple years ago.
Yeah, he came after our Czech league when I went to Italy. He came back to, Boise. I had a great time, loved it. Like everybody loves Boise.
I want to ask about the jerseys because there's talk about advertisements going on professional sports jerseys in North America. And I saw some pictures of you, and if someone hasn't made the they look like NASCAR cars joke yet, let me be the first to do it. But, oh, my gosh, is there any fabric on those sweaters over there that don't have some sort of advertising?
No, it's funny you say that because I thought the same thing. I was trying to – I think, why they don't do it like that? And then some guy explained to me, that's how they pay you your money. What are you talking about? He goes, these sponsors put money up for the team and donate money, and that's how the general manager goes out and brings guys in. That's his operating budget. So for you to give X amount of dollars, you're going to get a crest the size on the jersey. So the more money you give, obviously, you get a bigger crest on the jersey or a bigger sponsor piece on the jersey. So all the years I've been over there, they've done that to an extent. I think it's, I mean, coming from North America, when they have that, I think just retail-wise, they make enough money off of souvenirs and jerseys and hats and everything else and their merchandise. But in Europe, it doesn't really work like that. And I think that's when you were talking about, like, the premiership and stuff. That's why they have, like, the one main sponsor, and that's the only one on their jersey, and they have the little crest on their heart for the club. So, I mean, it depends. It's one of those things, you have to make money somehow, and that's how they do it over there.
Well, if my paycheck is coming because someone's putting their logo on my jersey, I'm finding a bigger jersey to get more logos on there, because I want to make sure that check clears every time it comes every couple of weeks.
Yeah, it was funny. It was good. I mean, it's one of those things that I got them all hanging up at my folks' house, actually, in one of their spare closets, and it's funny to go through and look at all the sponsors and stuff like that. And even, you know, like when I was in Czech and being in Czech and not knowing what it was, what the sponsorship was, and then looking at my Japanese one with the kind of the hieroglyphics on there. It's interesting to take a peek at, but I mean, I once you get used to them, they're a lot of fun. I mean, I really liked ours in Sheffield this year. They had old Flyers colors, and I mean, I thought they're well done, very tastefully put together.
Yeah, I do have to admit, I like the colors in that as a Flyers fan myself. You've talked a couple of times about taking the next step. I'll call it your third career now, as you're kind of taking that step going from on the ice to behind the bench. I guess last year, coach of Sheffield was Gerard Adams. He left, and now Paul Thompson stepping up as a new head coach this year, correct?
Yeah, Paul Thompson. He's just getting out of, I think, the Swedish Allsvenskan League, and he's had a lot to do with the UK Olympic program and their World Cup teams, and he's been trying to bring them up to higher standards, and he's a guy that's very well respected in Europe, and a guy that's had a really good career in Europe as an English coach, and a guy that's gone to other countries where, I mean, you think of the UK, you don't think of hockey coaches. So he's got a lot of drive, a lot of ambition. He's done really well for himself. I'm excited to be working with him.
I again, going to the overseas papers, I was able to find a little bit of information, some quotes out of him. First of all, congratulations, you're going to be the assistant coach of the Sheffield Steelers. Mm-hmm. I imagine you'll be working primarily with the defense, but it could change, I guess.
That's a good guess. That's where I'm going to stand.
A couple of the interesting quotes that I actually found from Paul Thompson was that I read it that you had a phone interview with him. Obviously, he didn't fly you out for the interview, seeing as how you had apparently some sort of relationship prior to the end of the season. He said that you have the least experience of anybody that he was talking to for the assistant coach position. But he also mentioned after that phone call, when he hung up the phone with you, he turned to his wife and said that, you know, quote, that's our guy. So first of all, the least experienced, he did go on to mention about that you do have quite the pedigree of coaching bloodline coming from your dad, Don Hay, and we'll talk about him in a minute. But getting the approval when he goes straight to his wife is something that's got to make you feel pretty warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, it was, I mean, saying that was really flattering. I mean, it's funny. I think with that stuff, I look as the 15 years pro I played as experience. I mean, it's hockey. I think I'm kind of a master's in that by now. If I put 15 years into it, the old outliers, 10,000 hours, I think I'm getting pretty close to understanding what's going on the hockey rink. As far as coaching goes, yeah, I haven't had to put a practice plan together. Draw up a lineup. I haven't had to go out and recruit guys and sign guys, but I mean, I know where I've stood when people are doing that for me and what I cue to and what, I mean, I respect and things like that. And I think, I mean, being fresh and being green on that side of it, it doesn't mean I'm not long in the tooth on the playing part of it. So, I mean, I do have a little bit of credibility in that regard. And Mm-hmm. And like you said, I mean, I've grown up in it since I was, you know, 5, 6 years old. I've been, I mean, a rink rat. I've been drugged down to the rink by my dad for a long time and seen him work on the kitchen table putting stuff together. So, I mean, I've been around it. And my father was a guy that, I mean, brought me under his arm and taught me how to do things and showed me why he do the things. And he had a couple guys ahead of him and Ken Hitchcock, and who's the coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets now and a former Flyers coach with Gil Lake. And then Tom Redding, who's president of Canadian Hockey now, and two guys that taught him. And I mean, I was a fly on the wall when those guys were around. And I had the luxury of, you know, being able to sit in backyards, have barbecues and talk to those guys and pick their brains and bend their ear. And I mean, I understand that experience quote, but I mean, at the same time too, I've had a pretty blessed hockey life and the people I've got to be around and the experiences I've got to be around. And I've always considered myself a fan of the game, student of the game. And I've always tried to learn wherever I've gone, whether it's been good stuff or bad stuff, and how I wanted to be if I ever coached and what I didn't want to do if I ever got into co-coaching. I read a lot of sports autobiographies and coaches and baseball managers and this and that, and things I'm fans of and people that I respect just in the sporting world. And it's nice to see and read different things that give you different ideas and give you different perspective. And I think, at the end of the day, you have to love what you do. And I've been fortunate enough to parlay a love of hockey into something that gives me a secondary career in it.
That's a good place to stop for the end of part one of this Daryl Hay exclusive interview here on Two Sports. Let's make sure you tune in later this week for part two, where we finish our conversation with former Idaho Steelheads defenseman Daryl Hay and current assistant coach for the Sheffield Steelers. Until next time, this is John Mulhern saying thanks for listening to Two Sports Nuts.